live from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wecker Drive. It's me, Anna D, Anna DeVlantis. I want to get to what's coming up on the show, then some thoughts on some things going on in the world. And there's a new coyote sighting. We just learned of this, Lauren.
Yeah.
We saw one downtown near Northwestern Memorial Hospital, kind of trolling the streets of Columbus and Illinois. Bit a guy.
Yeah.
And he went to the hospital. Bit someone else in Lincoln near Lincoln Park Zoo outside the little five-year-old.
Yeah, little five-year-old in the head.
Oh,
that
I didn't
is
even
terrifying.
Know that. Right by Peggy Notenbart Museum there, just kind of walking with a parent. It just seems as if a very aggressive coyote is
That's
out.
What's strange, is normally you would think these coyotes would be afraid, but they don't seem to be afraid of people at all.
In the past, you know, I've seen them occasionally in neighborhoods, especially if you're near the Chicago, like the river there, the lagoons and things. But they run away unless you have a small dog, I suppose. They've always been in danger. But this particular one, or maybe more than one, does seem very aggressive.
There's definitely one that's injured, because a few videos I've seen of one kind of hobbling.
Limping,
so I think that
right.
might be the same one.
And now there's a new development.
Yes, so apparently Lincoln Park High School was placed on lockdown earlier. I can't figure out if they still are, because a lot of the reports are coming out now about it because of a sighting over there. So the officials are looking
Lincoln
for
Park
them.
Lincoln Park High School put on lockdown. Oh, so I guess they're trying to track down this one. You would think authorities are pretty hell-bent on getting it because of it being so aggressive that they really want to find this particular one. So I hope they do. Coming up on the show, we will have the Lincoln Park Zoo Urban Wildlife Director talk about why we're seeing such an increase of coyotes. There's a huge increase since 2005. There's been doubled the population in Cook County. So they're coming into the urban areas. The population is growing. He's going to talk about that.
They definitely have some food sources here, so that's
they're
probably
hungry.
Part of it.
They're hungry, so that's that is a big part of it. So we'll talk to him. That's coming up. And then your home, probably one of the biggest investments you'll ever make, if not the biggest. A lot of people, I think, feel that way. And what's happening to home values across Chicago? We talked to an expert today. He's a real estate expert. He had a brokerage firm for many years. Huge success story in his own right. And he compiled the data. So he looked at all the suburbs. He looked at all the city and the neighborhoods, tried to see what's growing, what prices are rising, what prices are staying flat, or where valuations are going down. And where's a good place to buy if you're thinking for the future, either yourself or an investment property or anything like that? Home's a big purchase, a big investment.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of want to know what's what. And I know real estate property values have played a role in things where they've gone up the highest also affects your values. So lots to consider when you look at the data there. And then, bad news for Jussie Smollett.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I feel so bad.
Very upset about this, aren't we, Lauren? He could finally be getting his due. That's how I look at it. So he's the one who staged the fake hate crime.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. Then the city sued him because they spent $100,000 or more on the investigation.
A lot of overtime used by police.
All that time and energy, and then his national publicity tour that he went on. Then he sued the city, right? So then he said, no, you're like harming my reputation or something. I think that was his claim. But anyway, those lawsuits are separate from this. Now what's happening? A judge says that investigators can get into his emails.
Mm-hmm.
An entire year worth of emails, deleted emails, drafted emails, his Google Drive, everything.
Searches.
There.
All kinds of interesting things.
Location data.
Yeah. Location data. How about that?
How come the CPD didn't get access to this when they were investigating?
Well, I wonder if they're not allowed to necessarily. Are they? Are they allowed to necessarily? We should
find out about that.
The special
prosecutor seems to be able to get the court order to do it. But although there was a lot of information, remember, Superintendent Andy Johnson said there was a lot of information that we didn't have yet. So maybe they did have it.
There were pages and pages, you're right, documents that they had that did not necessarily get released. But maybe they did have it, Ryan. I mean, come to think of it, it's very possible they had some. But this seems to go even broader than that, right? You go into his deleted emails and his Google Drive and you think about what that might show here.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not only day of, too. I think a lot of us are thinking day of, but I mean, it's all the conversations he had in the months after, even after the charges were dropped. Conversations he had with his manager, conversations he had with his attorneys. All that should be included in this.
Or with the two brothers.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, God, didn't think about that.
Yeah.
That was Sendero brothers.
Because there can definitely, you could see that there might be a closer relationship than he let on through conversation.
He was training with one of them, right? He was one that he had paid, or maybe both of them. He had paid them a certain amount of money. And he said that that was not for staging the hate crime, but that it was really for training and diet and nutrition help or something like that. And then remember when he was attacked, he originally said it was people in white men in MAGA hats, but of course later proven on the surveillance tapes to be them.
Yeah.
I just wonder what this is. I mean, this is, I think this is going to blow up for Jesse. I really do. But we're going to talk to someone who knows this kind of stuff. He's a former assistant state's attorney, and he knows about what the investigator might be looking at here and how this, well, it might be bad news for Jesse Smollett. And then it's Thursday, so we'll talk family and parenting issues. And I'm wondering if maybe our two therapists can explain how you break up with your family. Or separate yourself like Megan and Harry
it's
are
not
doing.
You, it's
how do you
me.
Do that? No, but I mean, like they're really kind of breaking up with the mm-hmm. family. I mean, I know in my family, even keeping grandkids away at the holiday time, that's like a slap in the face.
Oh yeah,
that's not accepted. I mean, that would be all out war.
That's fighting
in my family. You wouldn't say, "Oh yeah, we're gonna go away. We're gonna be in Hawaii for the Christmas." No way, that wouldn't happen.
No,
wouldn't be allowed. But they did that and then took the next step. Doesn't seem like the Queen's very happy about all that. She seems quite peeved. We'll talk a little more about that, to use a British word. And then, as I said, we've got the Jesse Smollett case. That's coming up with the assistant attorney, former assistant U.S. attorney, Jeffrey Kramer. He'll be with us on the show coming up here on WGN. Back live in the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis, Lauren Lapka, and we've been tracking coyotes because there are a couple of developments. We just heard that Lincoln Park High School was on lockdown for a period of time because there was a coyote, maybe the coyote, mm-hmm. the one that's been biting people, spotted in that area, and now
Anna, yeah, a new
else.
Development. They're learning our ways. Apparently, CWB Chicago is saying that dispatch said coyotes are inside the Sprint store at Halsted and Jackson.
Inside the Sprint store.
Inside the store.
Did they just kind of walk in for their front door? How do you get in the Sprint store?
Do they have automatic doors over there? I feel like...
Yeah, maybe. Those are the ones that just open when you... Maybe they... Oh.
Is this true or are we getting to a point where people are crying coyote?
Know.
Is that what we call it now?
Well,
crying coyote instead of crying
wolf? Remember the one... Ryan, you'll remember this because the Quiznos. Remember there was a Quiznos sandwich shop. I don't even know if those shops are around anymore. But that coyote ended up in the freezer.
In the refrigerator, right? He was just sitting there and everyone
so
in the store.
Sad, yeah. But he got in there trying to look for food. I don't know how he got in. I don't know how this one got in. But if it is the one, you would think that police would be able to close in on it. Or the animal control,
And for
say.
People who haven't had experiences with these coyotes before, I mean, they look like sick dogs is basically what they are. They're really, really weak-looking sick dogs. I saw one in Arlington Heights a few weeks. I was just running on the side of the road. I pulled off to the side and he just stared at me and then kept running. I mean, it's not like, you know, they're not big and beefy and they're not wolves, but, you know, obviously they can do some damage to some to smaller animals.
Right, and they've been biting a couple of people, too. Yeah. So we're going to, again, that's coming up later on the show. We'll get to that. Right now we have on the phone with us Jeffrey Kramer. He's the managing director of BRG Global Investigations, former assistant U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Illinois. And Jeff, I think a lot of people had questions when they saw this Jesse Smollett headline because it really feels as if he's not going to have much of an ability to hide if the investigators really do get their hands on all of these emails, all of these documents, his Google Drive, deleted emails, conversations with just about everybody in his circle. What do you make of this?
There's certainly a lot of information on him out there, as there would be for all of us. Think of all the texts you write, the emails you draft, and maybe don't even send, but it doesn't matter. If they're drafted, then they're in the Google server. And if they're in the Google server, then a subpoena or court order can get it. So there's things that Mr. Smollett thought he got rid of before he went through this process that are now going to come back and may cause him some angst.
You know, I'm just thinking about that as you say it. When you say a draft, it's sometimes you create a draft in an email and then you realize, hey, that's too harsh, or I shouldn't say that, or I shouldn't send that, but that's available for them, you're saying.
It's available for investigators. I mean, 99.9% of us never have to worry about that because the only time this gets turned over is by law enforcement, and they have to have a certain showing, certainly a court order. So it's not going to impact all of us in a practical sense. I'm sure most of us prefer that it not be anywhere, but in reality, it's really not going to see the light of day. That's not true when you're a criminal defendant. All bets are off.
So I'll clear something up for us because we were talking earlier. Can police get your phone records? Can they get your emails? Is that all fair game outside? I mean, this is a federal sort of thing, or this is a special prosecutor, right? The investigator, Dan Webb.
Right.
But that's separate. Can police, and who has the ability to get those types of records?
Shockingly, any prosecutor in any office, any part of this country. That's just the reality. You can do it one of two ways. One is through a grand jury subpoena. There's not a lot of checks and balances in that. I mean, you've got the discretion of the prosecutor, but we have seen that discretion abused in certain high-profile cases. That's an easy way to do it, and during the course of this conversation, I can guarantee you a dozen such subpoenas are being rattled off in different offices throughout the country. The second way is through court order, because some internet service providers, banks, or whatever the information might be that you're looking for, require a court order. So the prosecutor would then have to make a certain showing to the court, and it's not a high threshold, and then the order or subpoena goes into, in this case, Google, and they get hundreds of thousands of these requests. There are offices dedicated solely to subpoena returns. So it does take a while, unless it's something immediate, such as a kidnapping or a murder for hire in process. Those are obviously going to get expedited.
So there's a special prosecutor in this case, Dan Webb. And remind us what he's tasked with. What is his job? Can there possibly be more criminal charges or criminal charges for Jussie in the future? What will he be looking for? And what are the potential consequences of this investigation?
Dan Webb, who is a former U.S. attorney here in Chicago, has been a special prosecutor on several different matters, and I've had the opportunity to work with him and his team on one of them, is a very well-respected attorney. So he is stepping in place of a prosecutor, and the mandate from the court is pretty broad. It's to look at everything regarding this arrest, investigation, and prosecution from A to Z. So that covers Mr. Smollett's actions, it covers CPD's actions, and it certainly covers the state's attorney's actions. As to your question whether or not Mr. Smollett can be facing additional charges, probably not is my bet. He's already gone through the system, and the state's attorney made a decision on the resolution of that. Now, people may disagree with that, and we've seen actually campaign spots by Kim Fox acknowledging that she may have made some mistakes there, and that decision will be done at the ballot. But I don't think Mr. Smollett, unless there's new information that gets revealed, I'm not sure he'll be facing additional charges.
But it does seem as if he's still pretending, in my view, to be innocent. And I feel as if any of this will be exposed, because I imagine this special prosecutor Dan Webb's report, some of it will be public. It would cause some sort of, it would come to light the truth here a little bit and kind of put it in his face.
No, absolutely. What I think the public will have in a prurient interest kind of way that we didn't have with the cases, criminal cases, you don't see too much public, because the prosecutor, some things might not be turned over, or if it's a plea agreement, nothing gets turned over. There's no court. There's no jury. So nothing is done in public in court. What we've got here is, you're right, there will be a report by Dan Webb, and through the Freedom of Information Act, most, if not all of it, will see the light of day. So there's an embarrassment factor for Mr. Smollett here, but that's a lot different than getting thrown in jail.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely. So Kim Fox, the state's attorney who handled this, and many would say mishandled it, you don't have to comment on that, but she is now getting lawyers to represent herself as part of this investigation. And I just wonder, is her handling of the case, what could become of that piece of this?
Again, an embarrassment factor. There's an election coming up, so it's certainly relevant for her political career. And it begs the question, why was this deal made at the 11th hour, behind closed doors, or whatever other euphemisms you want to use, unbeknownst to CPD? Those are legitimate public interest questions, and Dan Webb is going to get to the bottom of that.
Well, the hearing was not on the docket. It was an emergency hearing, highly unusual. Reporters didn't know about it. Nope, the public didn't know about it, nor to sit in on this case. And then the records were sealed. Highly unusual. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I've covered a number of cases involving celebrities, involving non-celebrities. That doesn't usually happen. It doesn't appear as if the normal procedures were followed here. I think that's pretty fair to say. Would you say that's true too, Jeff?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. Anytime you have a high-profile defendant in a high-profile prosecution, therefore, and things are done that are unusual, then we all should look at that skeptically, because the reality, I don't know if this is reality, but you hope the reality is that we're all treated equal, whether you're on a hit TV show or whether you're unemployed. The system is the system. And when people get special treatment, I think we all have a right to wonder why, and that's what's going on now.
Final, we just have a minute, Jeff, here, and I really appreciate your time, but there's this story going on in Springfield and across the state with politicians. There's this ongoing federal probe. It seems every few weeks or so we get another headline about an office being raided, about phones being tapped, about their years with former Alderman Solis, his phone conversations. Are we able to connect dots in any way to try to understand where the feds might be going in this investigation as a former Fed yourself?
You know, yeah, the office has certainly been busy the last 18 months, and we only know about the tip of the iceberg at this point, appropriately so. Some of these dots are connected. You know, they sent in Danny Solis. He was wired for a long period of time, and you don't know what conversations he's going to get until he gets them. So there's investigations that at first blush look totally different with different victims, different schemes, but there is a common thread that goes through that. Some of that common thread is Danny Solis, and some of it, frankly, is just Chicago, Illinois corrupt politicians that all are interacting with each other, some of the same developers, some of the same schemes, and we certainly haven't heard the last of this thread.
I bet that's right. Jeffrey Kramer, Managing Director at BRG Global Investigations. He's a former U.S. Assistant U.S. Attorney, Northern District. We appreciate your time. Thank you for weighing in on all of this, Jeff.
Certainly.
Have a good afternoon. More to come here on WGN, including that real estate data we were talking about. We have that. Sean Conlon will be here with more coming up. We're back live talking about what your home is worth. So your home typically can be one of the biggest investments of your entire life, and it can be the biggest investment. And you always, I mean, I'm always concerned. How much is it worth? What are the trends? What's going on? What suburbs are on the rise? What neighborhoods in the city are doing well? And a lot to talk about. Find out where the best buys are, too, if you're thinking about buying a home or trading your home and getting another one. And here with me, Sean Conlon. He's the chairman of Conlon & Company. Tremendous business success story in his own right, and we're going to get to that. You're also the star of your own show on CNBC. Second season now, The Deed?
Yes, second season.
Oh, congratulations on all that. Now, you came armed with a ton of data, I know, and yes, we want to get to that, and we're going to make it good data. We're not going to have to do any math, right? We promise.
Yeah, no, I'm not very good at math.
No, so. I don't love math either, but I do like hearing about real estate trends. And but let's just talk about your backstory a little bit, Sean, for people who don't know you. I know you're like a true entrepreneurial success story coming here from Ireland,
yes,
as we can all tell from the accent. $500 in your pocket is the way the story goes. Yes. And you just started working as a janitor.
Yes, that's true.
Is that true?
Yes, totally true. I guess as a real estate guy, arriving with $500 made me pretty
wealthy. That's pretty wealthy, yeah.
It's a good start. Because I had no leverage. I came to America, cliched as it seems, to pursue the American dream. I'd been led to believe that the streets were paved with gold, but I arrived in a snowstorm, so obviously I'd been misled out of the gate.
Came to Chicago in a snowstorm.
Yeah.
That just showed what a hardy person you are, because you're like, so whatever.
I gave it a shot, and I sucked as being a janitor, and I figured there had to be an alternative plan. And I tried to start selling real estate, and I would cold call, and somebody wisely gave me the Peterson Park neighborhood and a very Hasidic Jewish neighborhood, and I cold called
West Rogers Park?
West Rogers Park,
yeah,
Peterson Park,
there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would cold call every Friday night. And, of course, there was never anybody over there. So I drove over one day and met them coming out of Temple. Obviously, I didn't sell as many homes as I thought I would at that point.
But you figured it out somehow. Because you
eventually
built this brokerage firm, billion annual sales,
yes,
300 agents. You learned a lot about real estate in a very short period of time. Didn't you start out with this 3 flats or 6 flats? Didn't you have something to do with that conversion thing?
I had the good fortune to have absolutely no talent or no contacts. I knew nobody. I had a fifth cousin who was wonderful, and to this day, still wonderful.
So that was your only contact?
Yes.
In America?
Yes. They would come to Ireland, and I was fascinated by how big and tall they were and how many nice things they had. And I'm like, wow, I really must go and see where they came from. So it was kind of like Disneyland. So I came one day. I'm sure they were delighted to see me show up on their doorstep.
Were there moments when you thought, gosh, I don't know doing this? Or did it just really start to happen for you?
Obviously, no, it didn't happen quickly. I must confess, when I first came here, I was under a lot of pressure for 3 years, and I figured I wasn't good at anything. And for 6 months, I didn't sell a single property, and I cold called 100 people a day. I worked in the day as a janitor and cold called at night. And then I got a little lead, and I sold a unit for $20,000, a studio in Lakeshore Drive, 5900 Nord.
Oh, and I'm like, sounds like a deal.
I can do this.
You're like, I got this.
It's probably still worth $20,000. Actually, wasn't the best investment ever.
Speaking of that, we want to talk about where values are flat, where they're rising, and where they're declining across the Chicago suburbs. What do you got for us? I know you've been working. I just really appreciate it, because we asked you to be on a while ago, and you said, you know what? I want to get my data together. I really want to run some numbers and see what neighborhoods, what's what, and where is it happening, and give people some really good, valuable advice. So what do you have?
Okay, well, like any good entrepreneur, I'll take all the credit, but I asked somebody else to help me run it. So
Katie's here. I think we're going to give her a nod.
Katie,
a little bit of a
and,
thank you, Katie. Thanks
brother,
for helping.
My brother Kieran and Dana at the Conlon Group at Compass. They
Thanks,
know
Kieran.
Everything that's going on. And Renova, who do all these home flips, they give me interesting data, so it's been very helpful. So first things first, the most obvious thing and the most shocking thing is the North Shore. So we'll start there.
Yeah.
Prices, as you had said, they're really down. There's really no demand. And I think it's a product of changing lifestyles. All those exquisite big old country home, country style homes
on the North Shore.
People don't live like that anymore. Mm-hmm. People would rather spend $1,000 a square foot in a full amenity building downtown than have some beautiful Adler designed home on the lake.
So it isn't just empty nesters moving back into the city. It's sometimes it's sort of a lifestyle choice thing, is what you're saying. A little more demand is low.
I think people's lifestyles are really, really changing. So I think that is becoming an obsolete way of life.
Okay, so the trend, so what would the trend be? The positive part of that is what are people looking for kind of overall?
Well, so the trend is, despite all the things you hear about Chicago, anecdotally, it's an incredible city. And a ton of people moving back in. And you need look no further than the West Loop, which is probably one of the hottest real estate markets in North America.
I just read a couple of headlines that the founder of Groupon bought a lot of property there, and that Corey Crawford, the Blackhawks goalie, bought a big swanky little, I'm sure it's quite big, condo in the West Loop as well, because residential is hot over there.
Well, what's interesting, there's not enough residential over there. There's a hugely limited amount. It's interesting. I was in the West Loop in 2000. There's a great adage, pioneers get shot in the back with arrows, not pilgrims.
And, you were too soon.
We have a mutual acquaintance who will tell you that story well.
We laugh about it
every day. But there's not a lot of residential there yet, but the price is over there. We were involved in the project at Condon Real Estate before I sold it at Compass, and the sellout prices were like $660 a square foot, which was mind-boggling.
Hi.
I was buying buildings there in the early 2000s for $25 a square foot. I mean, it's unbelievable what happened.
So what period of time is that? Is that 10 years, 5 years that it's gone
I would say
dramatic increase?
6, 7 years it has gone to the most unbelievable turbo rocket charge change. It is unbelievable. I mean, I can't even comprehend the place anymore.
Well, and that's the thing, is we read so many things about what's going on in the West Loop. First, you saw the tech companies move in, like Google was the big kind of anchor to that neighborhood.
That was the catalyst.
A catalyst, better word. Yeah, and so they move in, and then all these tech companies and co-working spaces evolved, and it looked like it was going to be Chicago's tech area. But then McDonald's planted its headquarters there. It was like, woo, what's going on there? And Mondelez and Dyson, publicly traded companies, are now moving in and looking for office space in that area. It's sort of becoming downtown west, or something's going on there.
Here's what I think it is, and again, you read a lot about all the people moving out of Chicago. What you don't read about is all the incredibly well-educated young people who are moving to the West Loop. So people like Dyson, McDonald's realized if they wanted to attract the right workforce, they had to be able to compete with Google and the likes. And the West Loop has that. It's right off central casting for the cool kids lifestyle.
It so is.
That's what it is.
I live in that neighborhood, and I feel like I'm not cool enough for my neighborhood anymore. I used to be cool enough for them. When it was a meatpacking, I was fine. Everybody thought I was cool. Now it's like the hipsters are everywhere. The Soho House, you got that whole thing. But are you seeing people from the suburbs move there? Is that the point you were making earlier?
I knew the neighborhood had turned when I saw Anna De Volantis walking up the street. So I really should have doubled
down. Because you were there back in the day.
Yeah, I was. Right. I'm like, I just think I saw Anna De Volantis coming into a building. We should really double down.
See, that's the real estate signs. Or Oprah was already there, so you got to follow Oprah,
too. You were
too.
Like Starbucks. We had Oprah, Starbucks, and Anna De Volantis.
Right, that's all you need.
And I still missed all those signals.
But you've made it well in other areas, too. We're not crying for you, Sean. Tell us, though, where else we should be looking at now? What else in your data would you find?
Interesting things. You know, like places like Schaumburg, incredibly stable. Now, I will concede I'm very urban, and I've always been urban place. But, you know, the western suburbs have very stable. Mm-hmm. You know, Hinsdale, it takes larger homes time to sell, but that has remained a solid, stable neighborhood.
And there are some pricey homes there, so they're holding their value. That's a good sign.
They really are. Western Springs, home prices are up there. Interestingly, Clarendon Hills, those prices are up like 5%.
Mm. Now, year to year.
Yeah. So I can't explain why. I don't know why, but that happens to be the case. Lake Forest is down 6%.
Down. Okay.
Down. So
back to your earlier point.
If you have an $8 million house and it's down 6%, it's probably been down 10% some years.
Well, if you're lucky enough to have $8 million home.
Well, no,
again, not on the list
anymore
of people I'm crying for. But still not great news.
I think Naperville. Another solid market. Sometimes when markets are strong, it's a lack of housing inventory.
Interesting.
So that's the West Loop. there's not enough residential. So if you ask me where somebody should invest in a condo or a home, I think buying in the West Loop, when they become available, you will be able to ride it up because there's just not enough inventory over there.
Okay. And in the suburbs, other suburbs?
Let me see what other suburbs.
In terms of where would be a good buy
Where would I buy in another?
Yeah, if you went out.
So, you're again, looking. If one was, well, here's, like I said, so Vernon Hills is up 7%.
Vernon Hills?
Yeah.
7%.
7%. So I would say for people looking for an affordable place to live, if they're willing to work that far out and stuff, would be Schaumburg.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Schaumburg really has a very, very solid market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Park Ridge, it's down a little, but it's a pretty solid market.
Mm-hmm.
I think Park Ridge is a really nice place. You know, the other factor that's really important, and you'll know this better than I do in Wave, school districts.
Right. It's very important as a parent. It's so important. You look at your local schools because private schools, on top of paying property taxes in this rising property tax environment, becomes a huge, huge cost. It is absolutely, I think, maybe you find this from buyers. Top
biggest
three
factor. Biggest factor. In 2000, I opened an office up, around, Ravenswood area and Roscoe Village.
Mm-hmm.
And Roscoe Great Village, area. I, of course, was, 29, 30 years old, so I had no idea what was going on. I couldn't understand why people were paying, they were paying 6, 7, 8% more for homes because of the school districts.
Good schools, it makes a big difference.
Huge factor.
And you've driven around with buyers, too, over your careers countless times, and so you hear it from them.
Yeah, I eventually picked up. It takes me a while to figure things out, but after driving people around for 10 years, I'm like, wait, these people seem to be interested in schools.
Why do they keep asking about schools?
I'm like, what?
Why? What? Schools? People have children?
We do have a few questions from the text line.
Oh,
708 would like to know about Woodridge and Bolingbrook.
Oh, so I'm going to get trick questions.
Well, no, how about after the break, we'll come back see if we have anything in those areas.
Okay, so hang on.
Because we do want to come back and talk more with Sean Conlon.
Okay,
he's a longtime brokerage company here, and he's a real estate entrepreneur, assembled some data just for us, and we appreciate that. So we'll continue with that, talk more with Sean coming up here on WGN. Back live in the Skyline studio, what's your home worth? That's what we're talking about with Sean Conlon. He's our guest, real estate entrepreneur here in Chicago, built a tremendously successful brokerage business. But you're also the star of The Deed on CNBC. I've watched it. It's such a good show. You're so good on it. I mean, you've got the lovely accent, but then you're able to tell people how to do rehabs in a nice way, even though you're telling them, you're ruining everything. You're screwing it up. But you say it in such a nice, that touch, Sean. We have a little clip from the show we want to play here.
One of the city's top designers and her husband,
you've the absolute best house on the block,
have grand ambitions.
Wow, it's a big project.
What we're trying to do is build our brand.
But is there high concept?
I have found some amazing things.
Pricing them out of the market.
$113,000 over budget.
Are you joking me?
If I can't knock some sense into them,
if you're 100 over now, you'll be 250 over at the end. It's pretty scary.
Their finances.
We need help.
We're sinking.
And future in real estate.
We're never going to be able to finish the project at this rate.
Maybe over.
If we continue on the path that we're on, we're dead. That's our children. That's our life.
Boy, stakes are high there.
Wow.
CNBC's The Deed. Sean Conlon is the star of that show. He happens to be our guest, Chicago entrepreneur. People are putting, they put a lot of money in a rehab, and you hear about it all the time.
Well, that sounded like something from Game of Thrones.
I thought you were going to take out a sword.
It's pretty dramatic. But it's interesting. Real life is absolutely stranger than fiction. Like, everything on the show is real, and I lend my own money. It never ceases to amaze me that people make the same mistakes again and again. History repeats itself. It's always the same. The contractor runs off with the money. People have these wonderful, grandiose design ideas, and their budget goes to hell because they've seen it in some wonderful magazine. In that case, wonderful couple, fantastic designer, but again, spent way too much money. It ended up being $250,000, as I said it would.
Well,
so I've seen everything.
That's one of the things I learned from watching that show and seeing you on it, is that a lot of times you think that it is a great way to make money by rehabbing a home and fixing it up and then reselling it, but you can spend too much and you can get really hurt.
So it's interesting. I am a huge believer in that there's still only one place in the world where a normal average person, such as I was a pretty ordinary person who did some pretty extraordinary things because I believed I could, and I was in America, and I was in real estate. Look, I have a better chance than you have of being hit by a meteorite than being the next Mark Zuckerberg. That might actually be a statistical fact. I'm Irish. It may not actually be massively accurate. And you do have me on here discussing statistics, so I apologize.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's still a great way to make money. It's also a great way to go broke. Mm-hmm. But net-net, everybody should at some point in their life buy and flip a home once. At least try it. I mean, I know that's a terrible
thing
to say.
You're acting like it's fun, but I don't know. I'm not so sure.
Well, my job is to make it fun. In the end, we did save everybody on the show. And I've met all the mistakes that I preach about on the show. I have a quote I love that I stole from John McQuain, and it says that there's very little we learn from the second kick from a mule. So I've met all the mistakes, but only once. So seeing other people make them, I'm like, okay, I did that. It's when they do it again on the show, I do get really irritated.
But then the F word comes out.
Yeah, I do swear a little bit.
Boy,
but my mother, if she sees that, which she has recently, does not like that. So I got to work on it.
But what are the do's? Because you're talking about the don'ts and the things that you see in the mess ups. Do you have any advice for people who think, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing that, or I am doing that?
Yeah.
Or even with your own home, when you want to make those choices to dump some money in it, you want to make the right ones that you can get the money out of it.
So you'll always get your money back, generally speaking, unless you do a Siegfried and Roy style kitchen or bathroom. But if you do a nice upgrade in your kitchen.
Is linoleum floors, are they still in? Because I had that in my
house. You know what? I suspect they're coming back in soon with lava lamps.
Old is new.
Shag carpet. Come on. It's the best.
No, you know, but I think that there's some things that are always classic, like the Carrera marble and stuff. They got trends come and go. And obviously colored cabinets are very fashionable right now. But I think if you're buying a house to flip, you don't want the biggest house in the block. You want the ugliest house in the block because it has the most potential. Mm. Two, you can never underestimate the importance of curb appeal. So wonderful landscaping is so important. It seems very basic, but lots of people don't do that. You know, common sense is not that common.
So those are the things you see. Is it true that kitchens and bathrooms are where...
Yeah.
You should dump your money.
That's where it's at. And while we're in the realm here of real estate advice, I have a couple of other little pointers. So, like, I think, like, I would suggest Jesse Smollett should maybe look at a house in New Buffalo, get a little downtime, get out of town.
I think he wants to be as far away from Chicago as possible.
Well, I was trying to
see
keep him
more.
Close.
Yeah, he'd like to borrow your house in Ireland, I'm sure.
That might be good. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that R. Kelly either buy a two-flat or downsize. He may not need the space soon.
Well, he's got the Trump Tower. Well, his girlfriend's got in a fight there today. We have some audio of that coming up on the show.
That is why I'm calling. I'm staying current.
Yes, you're very up on the news, Sean. You're not just a celebrity.
He's my neighbor.
Yes. Oh, he is?
Yes.
I did not know that. Okay. So were you there for the fight? Off
no,
topic.
I missed it. I possibly could have caused it in the elevator. I just didn't know. So
well,
I hope I wasn't flirting.
No one wants noisy neighbors, though. If they're going to be fighting, come on.
If you live in the Trump Tower,
you
there's
see
a lot
things.
Of noise out front.
You see some things.
And inside, yes.
Right.
It's lively.
There are a lot of celebrities in that building. I just can't. Yeah. You should work for TMZ on the side and you could make an extra dough because you might need that.
There's D-levels like me too in there, so we balance it out.
There's Sean Conlon, host of the CNBC's The Deed. We love that. Let's go back to the advice for people or in the data you collected.
Yes.
Because we have a number of people who have texted us and asked about home values in their areas. They asked about the western suburbs, and what else you got for us?
Right, okay.
In response to our texters.
We were asked about Bolingbrook, and that is, so let's take it from 30,000 feet.
Okay.
Good news. Western suburbs are steady and stable. It's a really good sign. You had made a comment, a home is your greatest investment. There's no question. That being said, people do get rich off their homes, but if you get to live somewhere, mm-hmm. there's a
Enjoy
psychological
it.
Impact to owning a home. So I always sold the dream more so than the investment aspect. I really did, despite being a real estate guy. I, as an Irish person, we have a mad passion to own real estate because 100-something years ago, we were not allowed to own homes. I'm English born, by the way, but I'm an Irish citizen. And
how do you feel about Meghan and Harry?
I mean, so I'm...
I'll forget I asked you that.
I'm sure of an observation, but she's a strong woman. So I think that's a part of it. I think, to be fair, she probably didn't get, educated properly in English culture.
Right.
It's quite a strange world, situation. The upper class English.
Okay, sorry to interrupt you there. I know you were talking very important data for us. And
well, Harry and them are going to be looking for a house. Mm-hmm. So should I run into them in London because I'm there once a month? Maybe I'll sell them something.
Sure, or Canada if you're doing any work there. Sounds like they're interested in spending some time there.
So yeah, look, simply put, I think it's an interesting situation. It happens.
Any other places that we have here?
We were asked about Mundelein online. Interestingly enough, it's up 6%.
Mm. So year to year, 6%.
Yeah, so
that's great.
Again, it's fantastic. So they are wonderful investments. I'm always concerned, of course, that when they're up that much, that the next year you'll be disappointed.
But if it's flat after coming up 6%,
I want to own a home, right? Mm-hmm. So I buy a home, and if you buy something with a 5-year window plus, you'll generally always be okay. Mm-hmm. And if you treat it as your home and you take it for all the lovely things it has and to raise your kids in it, that's where the value is. And then it's a bonus if you don't lose money on it.
That's a good way to look at it. That really is.
Experience.
Probably is the way to look at it. I guess, you know, you don't look at it just as an investment, of course. It's a place you spend all your time.
Yeah.
And so if it even stays flat, I suppose, that's a good investment.
Well, it's an investment in your lifestyle, right? And in your life. So I always did that. So hence, that's why I always lost money in every home I ever owned.
Mm-hmm. Can people find a little more information? Because, a lot of requests are pouring in about their specific neighborhood.
So two things, without shamelessly plugging anything, what I would suggest is that they would email the Conlon Group at Compass, because my brother has a team with Dana who analyze all the markets and frankly did a lot of these statistics for me and would be very happy to provide them with any information they want and detailed information
at Compass.
At Conlon Group at Compass. Yes.
Conlon Group at Compass. Compass.
Yes. Compass. They had bought Conlon Real Estate, my company, a couple of years ago. My brother has a large team over there and runs it much better than I probably would.
How can people reach you, Sean, and get you on social media and that kind of thing?
Oh, yes.
Tell you how you're looking in the on the deed.
Well, the good news is I finally figured out what my Twitter thing is and all of those things. So my Twitter is @RealSeanConlon.
@RealSeanConlon, okay.
And I also am @RealSeanConlon on Instagram. I'm quite an Instagrammer, actually.
You are. You're big on Instagram because you travel all over the world. So you gotta brag about that, right?
Yes, and that's kind of one of the things that's a little out of this. But what I'd wanted to do, I was trying to evolve my business after the brokerage. And so I have a real estate merchant bank. And its DNA is solidly Chicago because, as you may or may not know, Mayor Daley and Patrick Daley are my partners. Mm-hmm. So we own the merchant bank together. We have an incredible global footprint. So what we do is right now, our main business, we advise Chicago companies that are expanding into Europe and Asia. Mm-hmm. And it's so exciting. We have a group called CA Ventures that builds student housing. So I got to go to Italy to pick out sites for them.
Pick out what?
Sites for them to build student housing in.
Oh my gosh.
Spain, France.
What a scam. Life is tough for you, Sean.
Oh my God, it's incredible.
Really. Thank you for sharing everything with us. Thanks for compiling all the data. And again, people can go to Conlon Group at Compass if you want to find more information directly concerning
you.
Correct.
And we will provide everything. And thank you very much for having me on.
Well,
what fun.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Coming up here on WGN Radio, we're going to talk about how do you break up with your family like we've seen over in Britain. Just talking about that. How do you do that? We have two therapists here, clinical psychologist Dr. John Duffy and also an author here who's going to tell us why she and he, what they're doing right, what you're doing wrong, how you handle this. But first, the news coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Back live in the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis, along with two guests. It's Parenting and Relationships, because it's Thursday, and every Thursday at 2, that's what we talk about. How do you break up with your family? Or distance yourself from them, as we're seeing with Prince Harry and Meghan. That's one of the topics we're going to get to. My guest, Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, and he has a book, and he's also got a podcast, and we'll talk about that. But also here with us is Rachel Burchy. She's the author of the excellent parenting book, The Kids Are in Bed.
Thanks.
And we're going to talk more about that. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Rachel, you also went to Northwestern at the same time as Meghan.
I did.
The Duchess of, what is she, Sussex? Is she Duchess of Sussex?
Yes.
So is she a big star then? So you're perfect to weigh in on this issue, too. So we're talking about them because I wondered, there's this sort of family dynamic to this whole thing. I was saying earlier, if I even told the grandparents that the kids weren't going to be, you know, if my sisters and I all said, hey, the grandkids aren't going to come to Christmas this year. Oh, my gosh. World War III. I mean, that would not be okay. Even that one act alone would cause so much trauma and strife in the family. And then they did that. And then they did this. How are you guys reading this whole thing? What do
well,
you think, Chuck?
So I actually think it's kind of cool what they're doing. And it's not that unusual here. You know, so I'm working with a number of young couples and people who are just kind of progressive and in their 20s or 30s, and they don't wholly divorce themselves from their families, but they will put lines around like, I love you guys, I will be there for you, but I'm going to lead my life this way. Ooh. So as opposed to kind of capitulating to whatever the family story is, a lot of young people are really choosing their own path and writing their own stories.
Is that because, John, you find that people are not, their lifestyles are not being embraced, or is it just because they want to live this sort of independent life?
Both. Sometimes there's this clash between what mom and dad and grandma and grandpa believe and what I believe. And sometimes it's kind of like, you know, really have this direction I want to go, and it does clash, but I'm not willing to compromise my entire life for tradition.
Is it okay to say, hey, we're not going to come to Christmas this year? Thanksgiving? No, we're passing. That's okay?
I think it's okay on occasion. I think it has to be. Yeah.
What do you mean, has to be? Who's going to be okay with that?
Nobody. Nobody's going to be okay with it. But in a way, there are certain family issues that aren't resolvable. You know what I mean? Like, some things are just going to cause strife at times, and people still have to make their choices based on what they want to do. And I think if the boundaries are clear, and I always encourage people, if they have bad news, open with the good news. Usually the good news is, hey, I love you guys. I'll be here next year. Mm-hmm. I will miss you while I'm gone, but I have this obligation or this other thing I need to do.
That's a good way to put it.
I have to say, everything I'm hearing from my mom friends and mm-hmm. my mom Facebook groups, everyone is saying bravo.
They're cool with this whole thing?
Yeah, I think they think it's great that she's doing what she needs to do for her family, and he's supporting her and looking out for the best interests of their child, and that, you know, making it work for your family. I think that's what sort of all the moms I'm hearing from in those social spaces uh-huh. are just kind of.
You're very active on social media.
Yeah, you know, I find a lot of support in those kind of Facebook mom groups, of hearing from other mothers and what they're going through, and just, you know, it's nice to have a safe space to vent.
And you said there's actually an app to connect moms who want to meet each other who are in similar situations. I didn't even know about this.
Yeah, it's called Peanut, and it was
Peanut.
When it started, it was pitched sort of as Tinder for mom friends. Oh. And I used it, actually, because part of my book is about sort of finding time for friendship when you have kids. And so I was like, I need other mom friends. I have a lot of friends who don't have kids or who have kids but live far away, and I wanted to meet people nearby. And it's just like, I met my husband long ago, so I never did Tinder, but it was like, I can see suddenly I was like, I get online dating apps, because I was doing it for a friendship.
You can find quality, I suppose. I just think it's a wild west out there. It's so hard to navigate that stuff.
Yeah.
My gosh. Good luck. I'm so happy I lived in a time when there was only Match.com, and that was sort of scary then, but now it's, you know, that's the world. That's the world. Digging into your book a little more, since you brought it up, I want to ask you about, one of the things you talk about is the kids are in bed. Does that mean what I think it means? Like, it's time now to, like, get intimate, or does that just mean any time away from the kids is time you have to really carve out?
Both. Maybe. I mean, there could be time to get intimate. I think that is one, and there's a whole chapter in this book about sex and how, you know, your marriage sometimes takes a hit when you have kids because you're so busy parenting, you're forgetting to connect. But the title really speaks to something larger of mm-hmm. the kids are in bed and you finally have time for you, and how are you going to use it? And it might be to connect with a spouse, or it might be to read a book, or to, you know, get on the phone with a friend and connect with someone. All the ways that you sort of take time for yourself when you're giving of yourself all the time to your children or work or household management.
Time, it is a big deal. It's a big deal for me. I think about that. I feel like I'm driven from one place to the next, to the next, to the next. So it's like work, and then, you know, making lunches and dropping at school, then preparing for work, and then answering emails, and then back, oh, school called. It's, you know, it's a lot to juggle. I have a great life. I'm not complaining about it.
Of course.
I just feel as if sometimes that's where stress comes from, when mm-hmm. you're trying to fragment all your time, and you feel like you're just moving from, you know,
absolutely.
Task to task.
Yeah, and then sometimes you're going so fast, your mind is going so fast, that you finally do have a moment for yourself. And I, I always say, if you're on the massage table, but you're thinking about all the things you have to do, then it so doesn't feel very relaxing. You're not really having this, you know, leisure time to kind of refill your cup, as they say.
The 630 is saying, or what is the name of that app again that connects moms?
It is called Peanut.
Peanut, just like the nut, Peanut. And then someone else asking, really, Megan was at Northwestern?
Yes, she was there in undergrad in the early 2000s.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
People, not everyone knows that about her. I think that's sort of lost, that she has that Chicago connection. She was in theater, I assume.
Yes.
Right, because she's a very successful actress, and then went on from there. All right, apps are connecting people to have a baby together, not just connecting moms to find other moms. And this one is in the Wall Street Journal today. They talked about how romance is optional, that these aren't people who are connecting because they both say, hey, let's see if we love each other and like each other because our common interest is we want to have a baby. It's two separate people who may not have any love interest who are saying, I want a parent. You want a parent. Let's do this together. Like ride sharing or something.
Right.
Could this possibly work, John? I just don't see it.
It's so interesting how the generation coming up now deviates from traditional models in such radical ways. So in a way, young people are looking at adulting in a way that I think a lot of us did not. We didn't look at it in a meta way. I think a lot of us dreamt about what it was like to be an adult. Young people are picturing, like, what's this going to be like? Do I want this model? And am I willing to stick with something just out of tradition? And a lot of people are saying no. Like, I don't want to get married, or I don't want to necessarily get married just to have children, but I want children nonetheless. And so I'm willing to go this route. So I've actually worked with a couple of people who have not yet successfully gone this route, but are working on it. Mm-hmm. And they have a keen belief that this is going to work out well for them. And they're not yet interested in the close, intimate, lifelong relationship thing, but they want a child and they feel either a clock is ticking or the time feels right. And so I suspect that we're now talking about something that 10 years from now might feel kind of ordinary.
Did they meet through this app, or is this totally they met under?
I think one did meet through this app. The other definitely not.
I wasn't sure. All right, we're back with more parenting relationship talk with Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, and Rachel Burchie, the author of The Kids Are in Bed. More ahead here on WGN. Back live in the Skyline Studio, our guests on Parenting Relationship Thursdays, which we do every Thursday at 2, Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. He's the host of Better Podcast with his wife Julie on WGN Plus. He's also the host of On Purpose, the Heidi Stevens and Don and Dr. John Duffy podcast. Did I get that right?
A tongue twister, but
well,
yes.
Well, and so is your book, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. That's another thing. But then with us, Rachel Burchie, and it's so good to meet you.
Good to meet you.
And thank you for being here. Your book is called The Kids Are in Bed.
Yes.
So you really delve into parent time, like carving out that time in trying to be away from the kids.
That's exactly right. And sometimes that means carving out that time and maybe getting a babysitter and really, but also, you know, I talk to a lot of parents who say they have no time, and I always say, what do you do when your kids go to sleep? And it's like, oh, well, I have to clean and I have to do work and I have to respond to emails. And so the book is a lot about maybe taking at least a chunk of that time, a pocket of that time for yourself.
And what do you mean, what do you do for yourself? Like, how do you make that self-time really count or matter?
Well, it's funny you say that, because to me, the thing I love to do the most is watch TV. You know, I really like to settle into the couch with a blanket and watch a show and put everything away, not like channel surf or anything. And one thing I like to talk about is this idea that we live in like a self-improvement culture where everyone thinks, I think especially parents feel like, oh, I need to be doing something really important with my time. And so it's so stressful to decide what the right thing to do is that you just kind of scroll social media and then suddenly it's time for bed and you feel frustrated that you wasted your time. So I like to say, like, whatever you enjoy doing, it's okay. It doesn't have to be like capital I important. It can just be something that you have a little time to kind of relax and take a break.
I think people in general put way too much pressure on themselves that if they do sit and take a break, they're doing something wrong.
Yeah, there's so much guilt with it.
Yeah.
But just enjoying yourself, you'll be there so much more for your kids and for the people in your life if you take a little time for yourself and you're not trying to do 1,000 things at once.
Do you find that too, Dr. John, when you talk to people who come to you, that just the kind of that stressor can put a lot of, well, stress on a marriage?
Absolutely, yeah. And one thing I like about your book, Rachel, is, and I know it's not the totality of what you're trying to say, but the idea of protecting time for self-care, and it doesn't have to be self-improvement. It can just be self-care or tending to your relationship. And that's one thing I think when you have kids, that you have to do. And we were talking a little while ago about the idea that I've worked with way too many couples who decide, when the kids are up and gone to college, we will then tend to ourselves or our relationships. And that isn't good for the relationship. It isn't good for the individual. And it also isn't good for the kids. It's not a very good model for the kids of what adulting looks like. It doesn't look very fun, and it's not.
No. And then you think about just the sheer nature of introducing kids into a household, right? And what that does. So they're a baby, and that's one issue, dealing with that around-the-clock care and that kind of thing. And then as you go through life, it does feel as if it becomes more and more important to set those date nights and to do that kind of thing, because otherwise, you lose the whole thing, right? You lose the connectivity. There's still connectivity over the kid and the shared experiences there, but there's also that thing where you got to keep the relationship solid, too.
No doubt.
And it's
no
hard.
Doubt. Yep, it is. It is. And I think you do have to protect time once kids come along to do that.
Yeah, I always laugh that my first sort of date night with my husband after my daughter was born, we were so excited. We were going out to dinner. And the first thing we did was like take out our phone and look at pictures of our child the whole time. And so now we really try to say like, okay, we're going to do date night and we're not going to just leave the kids so that we can look at more videos of our kids on our phone, but actually talk about all the things that we talked about before we had children, like when we fell in love, what were we talking about?
Great ideas.
Yeah, no kidding.
Great ideas. I also find in our household, often our time spent together will all be on a device. We're like, wait a minute, stop this. Everybody put down your device. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to each other. Let's just talk, have some human contact, and put it down for a minute. Got to remind yourself about that. John, we also were looking at this other situation here. You had sent over some information about people who are going back to college and deal with their kids going back to college.
Yeah.
And what that does to a family and years. There are several issues there.
Yeah. So this is actually an interesting time of year for a lot of people, because now a lot of the families I work with, they've had a month with their kids around, including their college kids. And there is this kind of like post-holiday blues kind of thing that is settling in, where it's like, okay,
totally.
You know, you were talking about like taking the tree down and all that stuff.
But I got to do it this weekend.
Yeah. But also saying goodbye to your kid again, when you're now used to having him or her back in the house. This is really hard for a lot of parents that I'm working with. And that idea like, we kind of felt like we were back to normal, but normal is really when they're gone, not when they're here. So it's readjusting over and over again to a new normal. And it's really tricky for parents. But what I encourage them to do is kind of what you're talking about, Rachel, is self-care. Is like, you know, okay, so you've got, this is difficult, but you do also have this time. And what do you want to do with this time for yourself now that you've got a little liberty here that you didn't have before?
That's a positive way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel this weekend we're taking, the tree's looking really sad. For some reason, it didn't ever really take on water. And so it really was dying almost before Christmas. We were like, is this going to make it? It did. But now it's really sad looking. And we got to take it down, and the ornaments and the poinsettia is dead. And yeah, that is the first time I really start feeling seasonal affective disorder. I get a little bit of that, like those blues, that not that the holidays aren't stressful and overwhelming, because they are, and they're also a lot of fun. But then there's that sort of letdown when you just started, you know, cleaning your house out for winter in Chicago.
Yeah.
You see it, right? Do you ever feel that? You guys ever? Is there a certain time of year?
I was thinking it's like that day after the wedding feeling, when it's like you've been building up and building up, and it's all you've been thinking about for so long. And then you think like, what am I supposed to do?
It is. It's, you know, it's a real thing, that post-holiday hangover, the winter blues can set in for so many of us. Do you have advice to people about that?
Yeah. So one thing is that in the wake of the holidays, where most of us are pretty indulgent, right? And we kind of have in our minds, well, I'll have some kind of resolution, or something's going to change dramatically. I'm going to do it right away when the year starts. I always encourage people in general to kind of ease into that and make your expectations pretty reasonable and moderate, and go for the win. Like, instead of saying, I'm going to go to the gym every day and I'm going to eat, you know, 1200 calories a day, and, you know, I'm going to cut it all way back, you know, make it something moderate and work your way toward your goal gently, and be a little gentler with yourself, a little kinder with yourself, instead of a harsh shift, because I've been doing my job for a long time.
Right.
I've never seen it work. You know,
really? So
the harsh shift, people just don't hang in. It's really, really too much to ask of yourself. Mm-hmm. So especially because almost all of us are subject to some degree of seasonal affective disorder.
Right.
We're affected by the fact that it's going to be dark out in an hour or two. We're affected by the fact that it's cold and we're not going to be outside as much for the next few months.
Right.
And so we have to be a little easier on ourselves this time of year.
To different levels and degrees, I'm sure. Sometimes it gets to a point where you really need help, and then other times it's just sort of like the winter blues, and we've all felt that in Chicago. Most of us have. Another thing here, we were talking about apps earlier, and the app for moms to meet moms is called Peanut.
Correct.
There was an app for people who want to co-parent but don't want to be in love or don't want to have a relationship, which I don't quite understand, but you said you know people who do this, Dr. John, and that's out there as well. Then there's this other app that talks about how you can get therapy basically through an app. So you log on and you I guess it leads you to intimate questions about your relationship.
Right.
Have you seen this app?
There are several of them. Yeah, and more and more all the time. Initially, the early ones were intended to reach audiences that didn't have access to therapy or couldn't afford therapy.
Okay.
Now, like a lot of meditation apps and some other kinds of apps, they're becoming more and more mainstream. And my anxiety around this is that people who really need face-to-face therapy are going to try to mitigate that by just working through an app. So I think the apps can be helpful if you're experiencing a little bit of difficulty in your life, if you want to make some small adjustments. If you need therapy, an app is not the way to go.
Do you have to ask yourself, too, why you're going to the app? Because isn't that probably a good question to say?
For sure.
I mean, is there an issue? Is there whatever?
Yeah. Well, usually it's kind of the first question we therapists ask is, you know, what brings you here? Diagnostically, what are you suffering and where do we want to get? And you have to determine, and a lot of people have to do this independently, unfortunately, whether the app can get you there. And if it's a moderate goal, that might be possible. But if it's something profound and there's something emotional keeping you from it, you probably need to talk to somebody.
Happy Couple is one of those apps. It brings you closer together. This is what it claims. By quizzing each other, each of your significant other and yourself, about personality and habits, getting to know each other. And it provides a fun way to pass time and talk to each other about what's your blood type, how are you with apologies, those kinds of questions. How do you feel about the holidays? What kind of chocolate do you like? I mean, I guess that could help get you closer, but I don't know. Does that work? Are those types of things harmless and good for a relationship?
I'm curious to hear what you think, Rachel. Sometimes I do think that, you know, the old Match.com questions that are kind of very, very demographic and don't kind of hint at the nuance of life, of everyday life, don't necessarily give you a feel for the other person. Whereas, do you like chocolate? That might be deeper and more meaningful, and the reasons for some of that might mean something to you. Who do you listen to? You know, like, you know, what time do you wake up in the morning? Some of these things matter more than, you know, do our preferences match for what we eat for dinner? You
right.
know, yeah.
Jump in here, Rachel.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, it's
about
funny. There's that survey, the 36 questions, and it's this question of, like, if you ask these questions, can two people who don't know each other fall in love faster if they answer these questions together? And it was intended for people who don't know each other, but actually in the book, because, as you say, my husband and I, we had kids, we suddenly, all we were talking about was our kids, and so we decided we wanted to sort of reconnect, and we used that survey, which is meant for strangers, just to try to talk about something new that was not our kids, and it was things like, who would be your ideal dinner guest? You know, what do you say when you leave a message for someone? I mean, all these kind of silly questions that we probably had talked about, you know, ages ago, but not in a long time. And so I thought it was a fun way to kind of...
So you had fun with it. It was totally
just fun. Yeah, it was not, because we're already
like
together.
Cards Against Humanity, if you've ever done those, they're just kind of fun. Like, what would you do if...
Right, right. We didn't treat it as couples therapy, though. We treated it as, like, here's a way to maybe feel closer and talk about something that isn't our children and just to remember what it is that we used to talk about.
Oh,
I like the idea of talking. If you quiz each other, you might start a fight because it's like, well, shouldn't you know that?
Right.
Yes. Oh, oh, my gosh.
Yes. Absolutely.
I was dating a guy for a year and he didn't know my birthday and I got so mad about that.
Yeah.
It's like he was guessing. And I said it's in July. He guessed every single date until my day. And I was so mad about that, even though it was only a year of relationship and he wasn't right for me anyway.
So it all ended up with the opener.
Exactly. Do not play the lottery with this individual. Yeah. Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, thank you for being here. Rachel Burchie, it's so nice to meet you. You're the author of The Kids Are in Bed. Check it out. Check out John's podcast. We are here on WGN Radio Plus. And coming up, coyote sightings, more of them across the city of Chicago, including the high school was on lockdown for a little while.
Two, apparently. Two
By the way, schools. We called the Sprint store, and there were not coyotes inside.
Oh, darn.
Were they outside?
That would have been so funny.
They said they thought there might have been one outside or something.
Mm. Well, they're certainly seeming to make their appearance known. I thought they were night animals. That's the weird part about it. We're going to talk to a coyote expert, though, coming up here after the break. Answer your questions about the coyotes in downtown Chicago. All right, back live. Finally, our coyote expert is going to be joining us in just a minute here. There have been a number of coyote sightings. I don't know if it's the same coyote we talked about.
I don't think so, no. Because another recent thing that came out was one of the aldermen saying that the limping coyote that has been seen roaming around was right. not the same one that bit the five-year-old.
I think really that this is just a case of coyotes getting attention today, so everyone's calling them in. And they're seen every day.
Downtown, though, did you see that one that was on Columbus in Illinois walking past the AMC theater? And then the other issue is they're walking around during the day. I've seen them before mm-hmm. walking my dog at dusk, but I've never seen them during the day.
I've seen them during the day.
You have?
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
they've run through my yard during the day.
So the latest, what are you hearing? There was a sighting near a Sprint store in the West Loop?
Someone called in saying that there were a few in the Sprint store, right. but that ended up not being true.
So then Ryan Burrow called the mm-hmm. Sprint store, and they said that there was none in, but that they thought there might have been one seen nearby.
Okay, so earlier, bring
but
us
they
up
were
today.
Bundling their AT&T products there.
Coyotes, you know, remember the one in the Quiznos a couple years back? Remember that one that they found in the refrigerator? Well, they've got it. Apparently, they also earlier today, was it today or yesterday, Steve, that they bit a little five-year-old boy.
5 or 6 years old, right, bit the boy. And then there was a man who reported being bitten as well. Now, the city had a news conference just a short time ago, and they've not been able to contact that man to verify exactly what happened. So
bitten in the butt. Outside, and he went to Northwestern University
Hospital. Well, that's what
the
reports are, yeah.
They said buttocks, because that's what they say in those reports, but we know what that means. So, I just think there's some unusual things going on here, and I've heard that there is a population explosion, but let's find out from the man who knows. Joining us right now is Seth Magel. He's the director of Urban Wildlife Institute, of the Urban Wildlife Institute at Lincoln Park Zoo. Seth, thanks for joining us. This afternoon.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So tell us, is it unusual to see a coyote in the middle of the day? Is there anything here about this particular coyote behavior that is unusual?
It is slightly unusual to see a coyote in the middle of the day, although I certainly have seen them in the middle of the day, as it sounds like some of you have as well. What's extremely unusual is for them to attack humans. You almost never hear of that in any city, let alone Chicago. So that's the part that I think is really quite strange.
I think that, too. I hadn't heard of that before. And to think that a man, and I know that I guess they're confirming that 32-year-old man who was bitten, and then the 5 or 6-year-old child who's, I think, still in the hospital, bitten in the head. That sounds pretty scary. That was in Lincoln Park near the Peggy Notabart Museum. And those two things, what would it tell you about that animal if it's attacking and biting people, assuming it was unprovoked? I mean, five or six-year-old kid isn't provoking the coyote.
Well, it's just very unusual for a coyote to even approach people, certainly let alone attack them. So it tells me that something really strange is going on, and I don't know what that is. I'm only speculating, but there are a number of different potential explanations. One is maybe someone has been hand-feeding that animal. Often in these attack situations, that's ultimately what you learn, is that someone has been feeding that animal. It's learned to associate people and food, which is never a good situation for the person or the animal. You also worry about disease risk. You know, could the animal be diseased or stressed in some other way that caused it to act in that really unfortunate way.
I saw a stat. Tell me if this is right. Tell me what you know about this. The coyote population in Cook County has doubled since 2005. An estimated 4,000 coyotes in Cook County today. You often would hear about them in the outlying suburbs and outlying areas, but it does seem like their numbers are growing closer into the city.
It does seem that way. I don't know if it's quite a doubling, but it does seem like they're really adapting to the city. They're really becoming more comfortable in this urban landscape. And I want to make the point that while the numbers may be increasing, you know, the vast majority of these animals are not creating any problems for anyone. They tend to be quite shy. They tend to run away from people. So I don't think necessarily if their populations are increasing, that's a cause for concern, because these attacks are still very unusual.
Not only that, is it strange to see so many in the city area when they're not really pack animals?
Well, Yeah, coyotes are interesting because they can function in packs, but they also can function on their own, which makes them a little different from wolves. I think it's unusual, but I think it's sort of becoming the new normal. We're seeing this in a lot of cities. So we work in cities all around the U.S. and Canada, and most major U.S. cities are going to be seeing an increase in these coyotes. They're just they're adapting. They're learning. They're learning tricks like looking both ways before they cross the street. They're kind of figuring out how to live around us.
If you go up the food chain, who's their predator?
Who's their predator?
Yeah,
they don't have predators. Their major mortality source in cities is cars. So I guess their predator is cars. And that's part of why typically, you know, as we said, we see them out during the day, but normally you expect them to be running around late at night. They do that, we think, to avoid cars, because cars are really what kills them.
There also seems to be confusion on if the coyotes are protected around here. Is that true?
So the city essentially has a city policy that is essentially a live and let live type policy, that unless these animals are creating a problem, unless they're acting aggressively, which obviously this one individual or maybe a few individuals are doing, but for the most part, the city has agreed to this policy that we leave coyotes alone when they're just going about their normal daily business in the city, which I think is the right approach, because as I said, most of these animals are they're really not creating any problems. They're eating rabbits, they're eating rats and mice and kind of the normal things they would eat.
So that's I'm glad you raised that issue, because we had a number of texts earlier when we raised this story and we talked about it top of the show around 1 o'clock, and actually while you've been on the air with us now, since coyotes 219 text, since coyotes eat mice and rats, we should be thankful we have a lot of them in Chicago. Is that true? Are they keeping the rat population in check?
I don't know if they're really eating enough rats to help us in a big way, but I do know that coyotes are not raccoons. You know, raccoons are mostly eating our trash. Coyotes are mostly not eating trash. They're mostly eating small mammals, you know, maybe birds and bird eggs when they can get them. So they are kind of fulfilling an important ecological role that way.
Can they climb trees? I mean, what are their abilities in terms? I know that we see them near the river and the lagoons a lot, and they tend to stay in those types of areas. But where do they go for prey? Where would you be most likely to see them?
Yeah, they don't climb trees. They are quite agile, though. They're very good at getting underneath fences. Even when those fences seem very low to the ground, they seem to be very good at kind of digging their way underneath them. As far as where we see them a lot in the city, I mean, we see them in the parks, of course, but also in some spaces that I don't think people would expect. For example, places like golf courses and cemeteries, especially in the winter, these are places people don't really go, but they're full of those kinds of animals that coyotes like to eat. In some ways, they probably know our city better than we do as far as finding these little patches of habitat where they can find prey, where they can find mates, where they can find shelter, all the things that they need.
Melanie asks, another listener says, could someone have been giving them something to eat that would agitate them because of this unusual nature of them biting? This one of those coyotes also has a limp, I notice. I don't know, could an injury cause them to be agitated?
Well, I do sometimes wonder if an injured animal might be in kind of a desperate situation where it has difficulty hunting and maybe turns to humans that are giving it a handout or some kind of food source, and then starts to identify them as a source of food, as I kind of described earlier. You know, something else that you sometimes worry about is what are called anticoagulant rodenticides. We put out these very potent, sometimes, poisons to kill rats and mice. Well, if a coyote eats enough rats and mice that have taken up some of that poison, that can also create neurological effects that can lead to strange behaviors. And again, I should make sure to emphasize, I'm speculating. I don't really know what the situation is with this individual coyote, but that's one potential explanation.
It sure seems important to get the one that's biting people off the streets. And I know that they're really trying to focus on that. There have been a number of sightings. Even today, we saw Lincoln Park High School on lockdown.
Yep.
It's been cited, you've been telling us, Lauren, a couple of places across the city
today. Eventually CPS said they had to put two schools on lockdown. I would guess also near Lincoln Park High School. That would make the most sense to me. And then there was the sighting near the Sprint store, apparently. We heard earlier today near Northwestern Hospital
as
well.
Northwestern Memorial downtown. That was the other thing that I think struck a lot of us, to think that Northwestern Memorial Hospital or Illinois and Columbus, you think about those areas, it just seems as if there's such heavily trafficked, you know, skyscraper type zones that you just I wouldn't expect to see a coyote. Are we seeing them more and more in those spaces, or is it more common than I would think?
Well, it does happen. I would say it's still pretty uncommon. One of you earlier referenced the famous Quiznos coyote from, I think yes. that was about 10 years ago, that kind of in the loop, like walked into a Quiznos. And these animals do periodically, and it's rare, but they occasionally do these very strange things. And, you know, part of why we study what we're studying is so that we can start to try to understand why do these rare events happen and what causes an animal to do these things that to us seem completely unimaginable. And it's hard to know sometimes, but, you know, we try to make some sense of it.
So what do you hope happens here? I mean, is there a population control issue, or you really think in large part most of these coyotes are harmless and we should kind of let them be? Keep your small pets away from them for sure, but, you know, they're not really as much of a big deal as we might otherwise think.
I think that's exactly it. I think we have one or maybe a very few problem animals that need to be removed from where they are, because obviously their behaviors have gone in a direction that's not going to lead to any sort of coexistence between us and them. But on the whole, I think over 99% of these animals really are not even just harmless, but actually beneficial in many ways as far as the services they provide to us, the animals that they eat. And even just, you know, for many of us, I think it's kind of exciting to think about the wildlife that we live with and the fact that cities can be wilder places than we previously realized, that we can coexist with animals in our space. I think these are all positive things. So while certainly these very few incidents need a response, I don't think we should be talking about some sort of broad overreaction to the phenomenon of coyotes in our city.
That sounds right, and I appreciate you weighing in today, Seth. Seth Magel from the Urban Wildlife Institute at Lincoln Park Zoo. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks much.
More to come. Trending topics on WGN. And as Vlanta is back in the Skyline Studios, it's time for trending topics, but I don't think we can let this coyote topic die just yet. Steve Bertrand is here. Lauren Lapka is here. It's a fascinating thing. I did like what the wildlife expert said, is they've been here for a long time.
Yeah.
They've been around. They don't usually attack people.
That's the only thing that's changed today, is that there was one or two. And, you know, and that's, like he said, it's a big deal. It doesn't usually happen.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, I don't think there's any more coyotes running around or being sighted today than there were yesterday at this time. You know, we're running around like it's become this, you know, plague or something.
Well, it's funny that the school goes on lockdown for a coyote that's probably there in that neighborhood
exactly.
all the time.
I mean, Lincoln Park High School is right on Oz Park. I'm sure that there are coyotes around there.
I've seen them around there. That's the place I've often seen coyotes. My sister lives in that general neighborhood, and when we're walking around, especially at dusk, if you're walking the dog or whatever, there are near the lagoon, you see them. You see them near Lincoln Park Zoo, and just in those little neighborhood parks, sometimes it'll shock you. You're
sure.
like, oh, there's a dog not on a leash.
Which means they're everywhere. You know, they just are. And so we get a little wigged out about things.
Panties in a bunch about nothing.
Well,
who are you talking to? What are you saying? I think you're right, Steve, about things in general. We all do that. So let's get a little bit more uptight about things that really matter in the world, like Meghan and Harry. Did you see the cover of the New York Post, I thought, won the day for the headline contest? They basically said Megxit
nice.
Is what they called it. Meghan and Harry leaving the royal family. The Queen's not happy. They also show a picture of what it would be like for them now that they're quasi-leaving their duties. How would you describe
it? Well, was it the Tribune? I don't think it was. I don't know if they did an online headline or just a mock-up, but their headline was Northwestern grad moves closer to home after a year abroad. Which I think is pretty funny.
That's really good.
I absolutely love that. Well, they're showing what they might look like as commoners, and they showed Harry on the couch in like his undies smoking a cigarette, and she's got her hair in curlers, and they're watching television, and they got like a lamp. They look like a Midwestern living room, and they're hanging out, but I don't think that's really
never going to happen.
Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, of course, they're always looking for headlines anyway, but they've taken their wax dummies of Meghan and Harry now out of the...
Really?
They're that upset about it?
Well, I think that they're living up to their expectations. They want to be withdrawing from public life, so they're taking them out.
Oh, my gosh.
That's interesting.
But really, all it's doing is getting us to talk about Madame Tussauds Wax Museum.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks. That's probably exactly what they were doing. Okay, something local that's trending right now. We'll get off the Meghan and Harry topic for now. I don't think that one's done, though, forever. You kind of get that sense, right? The Queen reaction now and everything going on. Love on the Ledge. Did you hear about this? Skydeck Chicago is toasting to love in the sky. It's this Valentine's Day contest. Mm-hmm. We've had it for a couple of years. So they allow you to get married or renew your vows right there on the Willis Skydeck.
Nice.
I get a little freaked out on that Skydeck. My daughter likes to do like cartwheels on it. I mean, like a handstand. What are the handstands? But people are really kind of get out there and they try to do the funnest thing and post it. It's a little.
Yeah. It's still high up there. Yeah, it's up there.
But you can do that. You submit your entry by the end of the month and then renew your vows or get married up there on February 9th. So you got that.
That's very romantic.
Would you renew your vows, Steve?
Would I renew my vows?
Yeah, there.
There?
First.
That's the first question's more interesting. I don't think I would ever renew my vows. But
okay. Scratch it off the list.
I mean, they're still working.
There you go. Right? Yeah, why fix it?
Yeah.
Nothing's broken.
I guess that's true. That's a good way of looking at it. On the list of why do we need this, you can ask her. You can ask her later. That's probably later conversation.
It just occurred to me.
Yeah, she's probably going to text you later. I'll just let you know what she thinks. The toilet paper courier we talked about yesterday, that robot at the
Poop robot.
Consumer Electric.
I think that's it's got poop in the name by choice. I don't know why.
Wow. Well, now they have another thing that's debuting at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas this week are the smart pajamas.
What?
Ever think you needed smart pajamas? They monitor your heart rate, breathing, vital signs while you sleep. So they provide insights.
Do we need that?
So it's like wearing an Apple Watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, kind of gets rid of your Apple Watch. Does the same thing, just about. It examines your sleep patterns, keeps track of your activity level, and tells you in the morning how you did.
But will the pants stay down? Because that's my biggest problem. My pajama pants always just roll up to my knees in the middle of the night. It's so uncomfortable.
They got to make better elastic bands.
Yes.
These ones look kind of goofy, if you want to be honest.
Because
they've got sensors in them. And those weighted blankets are so popular, so maybe it gives a weighted feeling. But they look a little heavy.
Have you tried a weighted blanket yet?
I have not.
I got my brother-in-law one for Christmas, and he loves it.
We gave our son one for Christmas, too. He loves it, too.
What is the thing about the weighted blankets?
I think it's like a kind of a de-stressor. It's just heavier, so it makes you feel more held.
Yeah, it kind of sits on the pressure points in a comfortable way to make you feel secure. And there's some science behind of how it really activates the melatonin in your brain a little bit more.
You know how for dogs they have the thunder shirt?
Yeah, right.
For
really,
I think it's...
For lightning, and thunder.
And thunder, I think it's a similar
idea. There's a weird science behind the kind of comfort and closeness and pressure.
Yeah.
That calms people.
Like, I like to hug up to a pillow or something, but this is actually heavy on your body, right?
Yeah, consider yourself maybe a little more embraced or just sort of held.
Mm.
It'll also kind of keep you from moving a lot at night,
Did
I
this
think.
Just happen? Like, I've just heard people talk about this in the last year, it
Past
feels
few
like.
Years, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also, like, was one of the hot Christmas gifts, I think, so.
Okay. Now, here's something, a warning from police about writing the full date, 2020, when you fill out checks or important documents, because if you only put 20... It can be altered for any particular date. You're laughing. Why are you laughing about this?
I'm not laughing.
You think this is funny? This is people they're
this
saying.
This is serious.
This is another panties in the bunch thing? Is that what you're
saying?
This
is me. You accuse me of being a curmudgeon all the time. I will be about this one.
You don't think this is a big deal?
What's the harm if you write me a check and I change? Why would I change?
I don't know if it's a check, but if you have an important document like a will.
Oh, so you mean someone,
or
since it's just
real
20, could
transaction.
Simply put in 2019 and say it was
they could
from
put
last
in 2006.
Right.
Yeah. They could predate something
so
into the early 2000s.
I judged you too quickly because I've heard it about checks. People saying, make sure you do that on your check, right, 2020. But it's like, if you give me a check, there's no benefit to me changing the date. Or
right, what does it matter? I'm getting the money.
I just think if you have a will and you just write 20. Someone could change it to 2006. Someone could change it.
There
must be legal documents where this is more relevant to.
I guess so. But if it's a legal document, you would hope that it would always be the four digits.
Right.
You would. One would think.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw a weighted blanket on your topic.
Do we have time to get to the R. Kelly sound? Do you think, Jazz? Oh, just a little bit. Let's just hear a little bit. The Trump Tower crazy. There was a fight. There
between
was a police call. Right.
You're disrespectful. You're so evil.
I'm not evil, baby. I need to protect myself. I need to protect myself. Joy, you were sleeping on me. It's a fire.
And it goes on. I know we don't have much time, but it got really ugly. And the two girlfriends that live in the Trump Tower, that R. Kelly's place, they got into it. You've seen them going back and forth in court with him. You know, the two girls that are, or women,
yeah,
I should say. They're 24. Yes, they're women. But it's just,
now
there's
streaming
domestic
live, right? on she Facebook
streamed live
or something.
And when it goes on for minutes and minutes, and it really
awful.
It's really awful. There's a domestic battery charge as a result of that, and somebody's in the hospital. So
Wow. That
was not a good situation. That's going to do it for Trending Topics. And me, Anna DeVlantis, we've got Steve Bertrand and Lauren Lapka, and the news will be coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.